Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When Lance Armstrong spilled the beans to Oprah last week, it got Boston Globe reporter Joseph Kahn thinking about lying, about why we lie, how we lie, and what it says about the human condition that so many of us lie so often. Kahn wrote about it in the paper. He'll join us in a moment to talk about the science of deception.
But first, let's be honest. We all know liars. We've all lied, maybe a little tiny white lie, but few of us will ever get into the Liars Hall of Fame with the likes of Bernie Madoff, Richard Nixon, James Fry, Jason Blair, Bill Clinton, and now Lance Armstrong.
Lying about doping and cheating for more than a decade is a big lie indeed, but the mechanics are the same for the small lies as well. The grease for it all is rationalization. Here's Lance Armstrong.
You did not feel that you were cheating, taking banned drugs.
You know, At the time, no. And I look up, I had this exercise where, you know, because I kept hearing, you know,
I'm a drug cheat, I'm a cheater.
And I went and looked up, I just looked up the definition of cheat.
Yes.
And the definition of cheat is to gain an advantage on a rival or a foe, you know, that they don't have or that, you know. I didn't view it that way. I viewed it as a level playing field.
So he wasn't lying. He wasn't cheating. He was leveling the playing field. Well, joining me now to talk more about the truth and the lies that surrounded is Joseph Kahn. He's a staff writer at the Boston Globe. You can find a link to his piece on Lance Armstrong and the science of lying at radioboston.org. And Joe Kahn, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we loved your piece, and it prompted this whole discussion that's coming up, which I think is going to be a lot of fun. We're also joined by Robert Feldman. He's a psychologist at the University of Massachusetts. He's an expert on why people lie and the author of the book, The Liar in Your Life, The Way to Truthful Relationships, which came out in 2009. And Robert Feldman, great to have you. Thanks for joining us as well.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Let me start with you, Joe. What prompted you to write this piece? I know it was the Lance Armstrong story, but this isn't the first time that we've had a case of sort of celebrity lie. What prompted you here?
Well, it certainly isn't. And you mentioned a long litany of pretty prominent cases. We've also, I might point out, had the case recently with the drug lab scandal of a woman who fabricated her resume in part to advance in her career and then, of course, lied about results there with just disastrous consequences for our state. But that little snippet you heard was a pretty great example of compartmentalization, I would say, with Lance Armstrong kind of justifying what he did by essentially saying, well, it wasn't cheating if everybody was doing it. But what prompted the piece was, I wrote before we heard from Lance himself, but the question was out there. At that point, we knew he'd been lying. We didn't know exactly what he was going to say about it. But the bigger question was, you know, how do you live with a lie like that for so long? And I think Professor Feldman will be much more eloquent than I on the science and the psychology of this. But it was kind of striking in light of how aggressively Lance Armstrong had been taking on his accusers. And that made him kind of unique in some ways. I mean, he not only denied it, he was suing people in
That's
court.
Right. Yeah.
And if you watch those interviews, if you go back to the Nixon Watergate hearings, there was what was the limited modified hangout phrase of sort of finally admitting but not really admitting. The one moment of reckoning that really seemed to come emotionally was when he talked about having to confess to one of his children that he had been lying. And maybe, you know, in many of these scenarios, I mean, I think of Jason Blair finally being confronted by his editors and having to admit there there's some moment of reckoning where even the highest walls of denial start to crumble.
They have
it's
to
pretty
come,
fascinating.
Yeah, have to come crumbling down. Robert Feldman, let me ask you about that. You know, you've written about why people lie, and one of the key takeaways, it seems to me, is that you point out is that we all lie all the time, most of us, and we're all lied to all the time, most of us. But before we talk about that, what's the takeaway from this Lance Armstrong story that sort of propelled Joe Kahn's piece? What struck you about his long series of lies?
Well, I think what was extraordinary to me was the almost complete lack of remorse, the sense that if there was any remorse, it was because he got caught. And this belief that he was doing absolutely nothing wrong because other people were doing the same sort of thing. And I think it's no different from what a lot of us do in our daily lives. We believe we're good people, basically. When we do lie, we do it in our minds to, say, protect someone else, to make them feel good about themselves, to tell them they did a great job on some performance. We tend to couch our lies in terms of what advantage it has for other people. So I think very often we don't feel we're doing anything particularly wrong. And if we do feel some remorse about it, we also feel like, well, everybody does it and they get away with it. So what's the problem?
Well, I want to ask, indeed, what is the problem? Because as you mentioned, we all lie in small ways multiple times in any given day to friends, to colleagues, to wives, to family members. And it's usually to make people feel better, to sort of, lubricate everyday social interactions. Is that really the same kind of thing as the kind of lie we're talking about here with, the Hall of Fame type lie that Lance Armstrong offered?
The extent of Armstrong's lie, the fact that it lasted for years, the aggressiveness with which he pursued anyone who said he was lying, to me is fairly stunning. But at the end of the day, it's still Lance Armstrong deluding himself and saying, no one was harmed by this. I deserved the jerseys that I won. I deserved the accolades that I got. I gave a lot of money to charity. I raised a lot of money for cancer. I doubt very much whether Lance Armstrong stayed up at night worrying about this. I really believe that he felt at the end of the day he was a perfectly good person, no different from anybody else.
Well, let me ask you both this question. I'll start with you, Professor Feldman. Are there ever good reasons to lie?
That's a very tough question. I think there are the philosophers will say that the Nazis are at the door. Can you lie about? Yeah, and yes, I think philosophers will say there are situations where you can lie. I tend to think that the more lies we commit, the more disingenuous our relationships, so that it's not a matter of advocating lying. It's not that lying is a good thing, but lying does indeed grease the social wheels. It makes our lives much easier. If you think about someone who tells the truth 100% of the time, most of the time, it's not somebody that we want to be around very much because they're always telling us we're
stuff we don't want to hear.
Yeah, they're telling us things we don't want to hear.
Right.
So there's research that shows that people who are totally honest and totally truthful all the time are not particularly popular. So in fact, lying works. That's one of the reasons that we do it. It's a very effective social tactic.
Joe Kahn, I want to ask the same question to you, or let me sort of move it forward a little bit. If what people like, and this sort of came to me as I was reading your piece, if what people like Lance Armstrong and Bernie Madoff did was to lie, shouldn't there be another word for what most of the rest of us do on a daily basis? I mean, we say white lies, those small lies that seem designed to make people feel better, not to hurt someone, to avoid conflicts. I almost feel like we need another word that shouldn't be called a lie. That should be called, I don't know, a not quite truth or something like that.
Well, I would agree that there are definitely shades here. And if you think sort of a lie down here, then you think of a fraud, a hoax, something that's really more orchestrated, in some cases more conspiratorial, where it may do more damage on a bigger level. I was going to say the flip side of this kind of everybody lies in ways big and small, which I totally buy into, is a kind of rising cynicism and loss of credibility when people are trying to tell the truth, or in some cases some hard truths, and nobody's really buying it anymore. And I don't feel sorry for many of the retired baseball players who were not voted into the Hall of Fame this year because of suspicion of steroid use and performance-enhancing drugs. But that's kind of, the bargain that ballplayers made when they began cheating and lying about it. I had a thought for Professor Feldman, who was enormously helpful to me, whether there's any differentiation in his mind or in the literature between lying about what you did not do, which it seems to be Lance Armstrong's case. I did not take these. I did not blood dope. And lying about what you did. And we've seen this in people who claim combat status when they didn't have it, when they claim degrees from institutions that they either never attended or didn't get the degree, when they claim to be cancer patients and scam people out of money. From a psychological standpoint, is it kind of all the same thing, or is there a difference there?
That's a great question. Robert Feldman, I want you to answer it, but just hold your fire for just a second, because I want to invite our listeners into this conversation. We're talking about lies, the lies that people tell us, and the lies that we all tell, the big ones and the small ones. Is lying ever justified? What about the white lies? When's the last time you were lied to? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Back to you, Robert Feldman. I loved Joe's question to you.
Yeah, it's a great question, Joe. And I think in some ways we tend to be less forgiving when people present themselves as something that they are not, as opposed to saying, the opposite kind of lie. But at the end of the day, I think a lie is a lie, and it has the same effect. And I think you touched on the idea of cynicism, and I think that is the consequence of constantly hearing about very well-known public figures who admit that they've lied and sometimes ask for forgiveness. I'm not sure Lance Armstrong did that, but in other cases, certainly with politicians, they say they're sorry, they'll never do it again. The particularly surprising thing to me is that we are such a forgiving nation that, there's always short-term loss. Certainly, if you look at Bill Clinton as a good example of this, after it was very clear that he lied and all the impeachment activity. But now he's one of the most popular politicians in the country, and we've moved on, and I think you can look at one of these big liars after another who in many ways have been forgiven for their lies. So the surprising thing to me is how able we are to move on as a country, and I think what it does is to breed some degree of cynicism. I mean, it's obviously a terrible message for our kids when you see one well-known role model after another who comes forward and admits that he or she has lied.
Well, you mentioned Bill Clinton, and of course we all remember this famous line from the former president. Let's listen.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
So that was a big lie. But as you said, Robert Feldman, the nation has seemed to have forgiven him, and he enjoys quite a reputation. Why do you think that is? And I'm wondering, I wonder if it had something to do with the political froth around that lie. I mean, the folks that were coming after him perhaps were engaged something that was, I don't know, more serious than the lie that he told. I mean, what's your theory about why he's managed to resurrect his reputation so well?
Well, I mean, part of it is that the lie was about a personal matter. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't that he defrauded the country in some way. It's that it was on some level, I think we do have some boundaries about what we should know about our politicians and not know. But I also think, you know, he worked very hard to rehabilitate himself. I think he, you know, and I think we'll find the same thing with Lance Armstrong. I don't think this is the last of the interviews that he's going to get. And I think I would be extraordinarily surprised if he didn't have some long-term strategy for rehabilitating himself. And I would also be very surprised if in, say, 5 years, he weren't, largely forgiven for what he did.
That'll be interesting to see. Let's take a few calls. We've got a bunch of callers standing by. Forrest is calling from East Boston. Hi, Forrest. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I was kind of curious about the development of lying as kids get older. I'm a high school teacher, and I work with a lot of 15- and 16-year-olds, and there just seems to be a lot of joy for them to see what they can get away with a little bit, to see if they can, you know, pass a lie through. Oh, I did my homework, but it's in my locker. And I was curious because I don't feel like you see that as much with adults. They don't seem to take this grand joy with lying and getting away with it. So I was curious if the expert could weigh in on that.
Professor Feldman, what do you think?
Sure. Certainly there's a kind of bravado that goes on in high school situations, I think, where people are trying to sort of take risks and be very obvious about those risks that most people grow out of by the time they get older. But I think one of the biggest issues we have as parents is trying to teach our kids about right and wrong, because we do, you know, we talk about icons like George Washington and Abraham Lincoln never telling lies, but at the same time, we teach our kids to, answer the phone and say, "I'm not here."
Or, I was just thinking the exact same thing.
Grandma, right. Grandma's coming over. She's going to bring you some socks. You're not going to like them. Just tell her you like them. So we're also teaching our kids the value of lying, and it's a very very hard distinction to make in youngsters.
Yeah. Joe, do you want to chime in on that, Andrew?
Well, I was going to just raise another little issue here with I'm tempted to say kids today. That sounds like an old fogey phrase. But, you know, nowadays that kind of what might have been more or less innocent lie, when you combine that with social media now and making things up that all of a sudden goes viral and it is out there. I think it really ups the ante, and we've probably seen or heard about some unfortunate cases where kids, you know, dissembled and deceived in that medium and really backfired on them. So I agree that we do occasionally, and I'm a parent, coach our kids to shade the truth for what we think are good reasons, and maybe they are. But it can be a real ticking time bomb, too, for young people when it gets out of control.
And, Robert, you know, listening to Joe there, it prompts this question. Do you think we're becoming more dishonest as a society? And you know, I'm not sure how that could be measured. But, I mean, are we telling more and bigger lies? Is there any way to measure that?
It's a fascinating question and be totally impossible to actually measure. But my sense is that, in fact, we are becoming more deceptive, more readily accepting of lies. If you look at the number of students in high schools who admit to cheating, the numbers are up. If you look at the number of lies that go detected on resumes, they're up. And so there's some data to show that we are lying more. But I also I really do believe there's a more tolerant view of deception and lying, and that and I don't want to sound like an old fogey either, but that younger people are in fact a little less bound by the necessity of being truthful.
You know what I'm struck by, and it puzzles me, and it came out of some of the reading of your work, Robert Feldman, and that is that we all lie. You would think that we're all experts at lying, and yet we're no good at telling when other people are lying, which seems kind of like that seems contradictory to me. Because if we're so good at lying, we should be able to detect it.
Well, we're good at lying because most of us are bad at detecting our lies. So, we don't get a lot of feedback. Our as we go through life, our default belief is that people are telling us the truth. It would take enormous cognitive effort to spend all our time trying to wonder whether we're being told the truth or someone's lying to us. So we tend to accept what people are telling us. And so liars have an advantage. I call it the liar's advantage, that it allows them to get away with their lies because most people don't call them on the lies.
Well, let's take a call. Cheryl is calling from Northeastern Massachusetts. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air.
Anthony. I have a question about compulsive lying. I was married to a compulsive liar. I'm glad to have just heard you say that a lot of us, just believe what people tell us, because I felt like an idiot at some point. But it seemed that he would go to the lie first, even when it wasn't about something important. You know, he would just lie. It was almost like he couldn't tell the truth, and even if he was caught, then he would make more lies about it. I'm just wondering what your guest has to say about that.
Sure. Robert Feldman.
Compulsive liars is a very small part of the population. I think in some cases it's a matter of power. It's just showing that you can control the conversation, that you can control the impression you give off, and that it's this power of manipulating another person that is reinforcing for a compulsive liar.
Mm. In the research that you've done about lying, what's the most surprising thing that you've discovered or the biggest misconception about lying?
The most surprising thing is the prevalence of lies. Mm. I thought it was a relatively rare phenomenon, but what we find is that when people are getting to know one another, in a short 10-minute period, people lie 4, 5, 6 times on average.
In the first 10 minutes of knowing each other, they lie four or five times.
And it's not, these lies are not, right. They're not, most of the time, they're not, right. We call them white lies. But still, they are there. They color the way the relationship moves forward. And at some point, you either backtrack and say, oh, I didn't quite mean that early on, or you just let the lie stay in place. So for me, the thing that was most surprising was the prevalence of lying.
What about you, Joe, in doing this piece and this research? What surprised you the most?
Well, I'm not sure I was surprised by anything, but I do think the point was driven home rather eloquently about the prevalence of lying and sort of the different categories and compartments into which this phenomenon fell, and I guess it was a good context in which to consider Lance Armstrong's case and how far he was going to go in admitting and what the fallout was going to be. When Robert was talking before about how we were not very good at detecting lying, which is one reason it's so prevalent, sort of the image that came to mind is you're driving down the Mass Pike, the highway, and there are cars all around you going 60, 70 miles an hour, and you have a certain amount of trust that those drivers are all going to stay in their lanes. They're all going to, maintain their speed. Mm. They're not going to do anything crazy. Every once in a while, somebody does, or you see a car weaving, and you go, I better watch out for that. And you're teaching your kid to drive, and you say, don't be surprised if something – drive as if you're ready for somebody to make a mistake.
Right.
And I think in most of our encounters, we're, speeding down the highway and we're thinking everybody's pretty much in control, pretty much dealing with reality and the truth. And the truth is that maybe that's not so much the case, and they're more, to use the metaphor, impaired drivers out there than we think.
Right, just like lots more liars out there than we think. Joseph Kahn, thanks so much for joining us. That's Joe Kahn. He wrote recently about Lance Armstrong and the science of deception for the Boston Globe. And Robert Fellman is a psychologist at the University of Massachusetts and author of The Liar in Your Life, The Way to Truthful Relationships. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And listener, the conversation continues on RadioBoston.org and on Facebook, where Dante Gabriel Funes wrote, "What's a lie? Does keeping things private count as a lie?" Stay with us. Coming up, Femi Kuti on his father's music and carving out his own path as an Afrobeat superstar. He's live in our studio with his band. I'm Anthony Brooks with Bhangu Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.